Oh. Stark.
Yeah, they make it.
Do they?
Yeah.
Those are all the start buttons.
As I started.
All right, so we're still a bit early, but we were talking about mesh networks for a moment. And I've talked a bit about the Eero, the E-E-R-O, Eero. And that can be sold, the most common package is three devices. So you have a base station and what they call are beacons. You have two beacons with it. And the price is over $300. In fact, the new version, the new generation, is up to $400 and something. We could probably Google it while we're sitting here. And the new generation has another antenna in it that's a different frequency range. And what these mesh networks do is they use their own standard for providing network between themselves. And then they use standard internet to go out. And at the same time, they're broadcasting standard Wi-Fi for you. So they talk to each other using their own means, but when they talk to you, they use standard Wi-Fi. So any of your Wi-Fi devices work on them, and then they worry about how to get it back to the main internet connection. What's happening right this moment, and this is like answering your question of what options you have to bring internet, to bring Wi-Fi to areas of the house that are hidden by by big concrete walls and rebar. Mm-hmm. Is that my coffee down there? Did I leave that down there? Yeah. It's proprietary at the moment. So if you buy into one of these things, there's two things that are going on right now. One is it's proprietary. So that means that if you buy the Netgear or the Linksys or the Eero or whatever Google's is, I can't remember the name of Google's, you're buying into that equipment line. So, one of the real advantages of the mesh network is that you can add another beacon, another extension point in an area that's weak, and it brings your signal strength up. So if you're already into this equipment and you've got a room off to the side you want to bring internet to, there's a good chance all you have to do is buy a beacon, stick it in that area, and it'll bring you a full capacity in internet as though you were connected to the base station in the other room. You don't lose speed. And it's because of their proprietary way of passing information back to the main base station. So the one thing that we're watching, there's two things that are happening. One of those things is there's this debate about trying to get these to interoperate with each other. So if you bought the Eero, but then you wanted to add a room to it, you could go buy the Google or the Netgear device, and it would mesh with the other manufacturer. And right now that's not happening. Even though we're in the second generation with the Eero, which is kind of leading the pack on all this, we've seen no real plans for trying to make these interoperate anytime soon. So I don't think that should be affecting your purchase decision. However, when you look at specifically the Eero, their next generation, which is about $100 more expensive, is supporting an additional antenna that makes it even easier for them to share information with each other and get it back to the access point. Your goal with all this is to get as much internet speed wirelessly into that room, and it can only go as high as if you plug a cable from your internet provider. So there's some limit at the cable. And when you add wireless to it, then you're adding another limit to it. And they're trying to break that limit away. So that's one of the things that's really interesting in this space, is trying to get these different manufacturers' products to work together, and they don't right now. So you pay $350 for a Eero, then you want to add a room, you got to go buy another Euro beacon. That's the only way it'll work. The other thing that's interesting that's happening, but happening slowly in this space, and I suspect next year this is going to be a really big deal, is smart speakers, smart TV sets, Internet of Things devices acting as range extenders. And I foresee that Google cares less about extending your Wi-Fi and more about getting you into smart speakers so you can use their services. And what you're going to end up with is you buy a smart speaker and it adds robustness to your Wi-Fi network by doubling as a mesh beacon. Right? So you put this in your room and you've got voice capabilities in your room, and by default you've created better Wi-Fi in that room. If you guys follow what I mean. I think this is really where this whole market is going with this mesh network. It isn't so much I need better Wi-Fi in the back room. It's all these, I want the lights to turn off and on wirelessly. I want to be able to speak to the room. I want to have those kinds of abilities. And when you bring that in, you don't have to build for those abilities. The act of bringing that device into into that area brings more internet into that area. It's a much easier sell to consumers. I mean, right now, if you want Alexa in every room, you got to get Wi-Fi in every room that you're going to bring one of their devices, one of their Echo devices. But what if you were able to buy an Echo device and it guaranteed more Wi-Fi in that room, plus it's a smart speaker? So that's what I see. Those are the two big things that are going to change. And I don't think it really affects your buying decision right now as far as mesh networks go. I think if you need it right now, you buy whatever there is right now. And the Euro, I can't say enough about the experience of using it. And I'll still make fun of the setup because it really comes to you like it's an Apple device. Hey, Gary.
Hey, good morning.
We didn't mean to start without you. We just got started a little early. And James is here, too. Good morning, James.
Get my heart, Jack.
You said there were three things, and you started with the Euro, and I never clearly understood what item number two and item number three were in addition to the Euro.
When you buy the Euro, the whole concept of the mesh network is that you have a base station, kind of like buying a cordless phone for your landline at home.
Yeah.
You got a base station that connects to your main internet, and then you have these beacons, and those rebroadcast internet and receive internet.
Yeah.
And what's fundamentally different about this is they talk their own language. They don't talk traditional Wi-Fi, so they're not interrupted by the Wi-Fis in your network the Wi-Fis in your neighborhood or any additional Wi-Fis you might have. They don't get interrupted by those. And then because it's mesh, a beacon can be daisy-chained to another beacon. It would do so only because it determined that the route was faster than going straight back to the base station. Like say you have a beacon back behind four concrete walls from the base station, but there's a beacon across the hall and its connection to the base station is only a wall and a half, then the beacon that's isolated would look at that and go, well, it's faster to go through this other beacon than it is to go all the way back to the base station and change the route of your data. You're no more the wiser. It just happens.
Right.
There's no indication that it's happening. Other than you're still flying on the internet without any issues. You don't know how it's been done. It's just magic.
Yep. Okay. All right.
So I think this technology is the future, and it's ripe right now, and they're figuring out. The Euros, what they do is they add nightlights to their beacons. So you've got these wireless-enabled nightlights that you plug into the walls around your house. And you can set them with timers, or you can turn them on or off right there on the front of it, or you can use a phone to do it. But what it does is it really emphasizes the point that we're bringing services, not just Wi-Fi, we're bringing services with these devices. I think the next generation won't be nightlights, it'll be smart speakers or something of that nature.
It
might be a smart outlet. Like put this on to control the corner lamp, and you get better Wi-Fi in that room.
Mm-hmm.
What about
stuff more be available next year?
Yeah, I see this stuff coming out on the market next year.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know how the tech's been going. It's just going to be dumped on the market. We're going to have a whole bunch of this kind of stuff to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason I feel that way is because of Microsoft's big push into Internet of Things. It's occurring to me I haven't even introduced ourselves properly, and I bet we've got everybody here now that Dave showed up and James has showed up. You can tell we were waiting for you, right? If you say Bitcoin, I'm going to come over there and slap you on your head.
Does an extender, Wi-Fi extender, work that exact same way?
No. And after I say welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club, my name is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. Thank you for joining me on this wonderful Tuesday to talk tech topics on what is our last meeting of this season until I return in October. We have started out by talking about networks and extending them. And James, you just asked if this is similar to how a range extender works. And this is fundamentally different from the way a range extender works. When you think of bringing more internet, and that's what kind of prompted this conversation. When you think about bringing internet a longer distance, you're trying to bring internet to a place that it doesn't exist. And all these points are all coming from a centralized point, that base station that connects you to the internet. So that kind of topology, we call it a star topology. And if you were to draw lines from the base station to the access points, that's how it would go. There would be here's internet, and here's the line to the extender, and here's the line to the other extender in the other part of the house, and here's the line to the other extender in the other part of the house. And so anytime you extend the network, you're going back to the base station. Whereas a mesh network has the ability to piggyback on itself. So it's much more dynamic in its environment. A mesh network has the ability to, at any moment, talk to one of the other extenders, one of the other base stations, or not base stations, but beacons. So if the line back to the base station actually proves to be slower than a line over to another beacon and back to the base station, then it will choose to send your data that way. Now what this does is it creates a much more robust Wi-Fi pocket, and you don't lose anywhere near as much speed. And that's how we started this conversation. A range extender is not a booster. And it's important to keep that in mind when you're looking at your signal strength and you've got 2 bars or 3 bars. You're doing good. 2 or 3 bars will give you maybe 75%. I'm making up numbers, but I would guesstimate 75% of the speed that you've got back at the base station if you're cabled to your internet provider. Whereas if you stick it through a range extender, there's a good chance you'll cut that number in half. And so you really want to think of a range extender as bringing internet to a place that doesn't have internet. You go into that room and you can't see your Wi-Fi signal. If you can see your Wi-Fi signal, then there's a very good chance that you're getting as good as you're going to get back there. If you go down to 1 bar, or it's 1 bar that's flaking out, or maybe it's virtually 1.5 bars, then you really need to spend some time diagnosing whether you can get, because what you're really fighting with is maybe 25% versus 50%. And it would depend on where that range extender gets placed between you and the base station. But you're not going to get anywhere near the speed that you could sitting right next to your internet connection. The mesh networks, because they don't suffer from the interference of other Wi-Fis around your neighborhood, they have the ability to talk to each other when they find that that's a... They have antennas that standard Wi-Fi don't use, and they have broadcasting frequencies that standard Wi-Fi doesn't use. Then they're able to come up with a faster connection between themselves than we get through traditional Wi-Fi, almost guaranteeing that same speed from the point of your ISP. Have I beat that to death? Is there any questions?
There was a very good article recently. Unfortunately, I don't remember all the details, but it said there was one disadvantage of those versus an extender, and I can't remember what it was. There was also a set on sale recently where you got two of them, of the mesh units.
That's right.
$100, and the third one was another $30 or something.
I have not seen that, but I have mentioned the Euro, which is like $300, $350.
And this was $199 versus $129.
And their Netgear and Google both have products out.
Yeah, this was another one that was a special deal.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with
it. Well.
Yeah. Cheap. I'm not familiar with it. But one of the things we were talking about is how these beacons could be smart speakers. And I think that's really next year, that's really what we're going to see, is we're going to see this dump of products onto the market that are like a smart speaker that brings better internet into that room.
Yeah. Okay, I got a question.
Okay.
Okay, so I can connect my modem to my Roku box in this 30-foot away room with a cable. Just put a cable on in the modem and another cable connected to the Roku.
Literally the best connection you could have.
The best connection.
Yeah.
Because I can do that for probably $40 as opposed to spending $400 or $500.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's that easy to connect it, then...
Yeah.
Because it really does depend on... I mean, if you're looking at the second floor four rooms away, that becomes a very expensive fix.
Yeah, the modem's on the second floor and the guest room is above our garage. It's 30
okay.
feet from the second floor...
If it's a matter of just drilling a couple of holes, then
that's what there it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but if it's like running conduit and labor to do all that work, then you're getting really close to this mesh technology. And if that's the case, then that's a real interesting way to go. That's very effective.
Okay.
Yeah, but a cable is always the best connection.
Scott, what do you think of those Netflix extenders that are mesh? You put them on your router, and they change. They go from mesh from then on. It's an extender that it uses mesh after it. Afterwards, if that makes sense.
Why? Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, I thought you had. It was a mesh unit that connected straight up to your modem or whatever. This is a Netflix sells one that's.
Are you saying Netflix, the movie company?
Not Netflix. Yeah. Netgear.
Netgear. Okay. Yeah.
Sells one that will connect to your R7000 or whatever router and go to mesh after that.
I think we're talking about the same thing.
All right, it's the same.
Yeah, you could plug that into your Infinitum router or you could plug it into your personal router, but that's what we're talking about,
and
is that kind of
with
equipment.
Mesh from then on.
That's right. And I've not done this yet. But I don't see why you can't add mesh to an existing infrastructure. If you've got something like an extender that's working for you, you have no issues with it, it's giving you the speed you want, and you're happy with it, I don't see bringing a mesh network into like the other side of the house having any conflict with it.
Good to know. I also saw the recommendation, if you're getting an extender, it's usually best to get the same brand as the modem.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the points we're making with these mesh right now is they're not interoperable.
Right.
So if you buy into Eero, you're buying Eero equipment. You buy into Netgear, you're buying Netgear equipment. It's a discussion happening right now, but I haven't seen any news on equipment.
But even normal extenders, they were recommending that.
You know, probably in general, that's a good rule, but I haven't run into problems with it. I use different brand name extenders in various locations without it. And you know from your experience with DDWRT, I know Jim does, that you can turn any piece of hardware into an extender. And so the name brand doesn't affect that at all. But for inner compatibility with the least amount of pain and customer support, best to buy within the same name brand. At least that way you can talk to Netgear about both your devices, my Netgear router and my Netgear extender. You know, Apple makes that really easy. Just on a side note, I've called Apple support on occasion. And one of the coolest things is when you're talking to one of them, and they pull up your Apple account, and the device you're talking to them about is out of warranty, what they'll typically do is immediately look at the rest of your products to see if you have a warranty on anything else you've bought from them, so that they can keep talking to you and keep helping you. And so they will do a support call, because that's the way Apple works. They'll do a support call for a device that you bought from them, even if the support is for another device that's out of warranty.
But if you, my understanding is, if you have an Apple product and you go to their store, they work on your phone too.
Yeah. You have to make an appointment, and there's a lot of complaints these days about how the sheer madness of trying to get an appointment. But they definitely will help if you own an Apple Watch. They'll help you with the phone up to the point where if your phone's out of warranty and you need a new screen, they're not going to cover that with your. Well, gosh, now that I say that, I may be wrong. I have to go back and look at that again, because I know there is some of that there are some AppleCare, or there have been in the past some of AppleCare that actually extended all the things that you have. But their customer support on the phone is really good about doing that, or has been in the past. I'm looking for topics. I came topicless.
What are you going to do this summer?
Yeah. Work at a bed and breakfast.
You go fishing?
Probably not.
Not if you're at a bed and breakfast.
Yeah, you know.
You don't get the opportunity.
It's funny because we always get a lot of people coming through and they want all this information on how we run the bed and breakfast, because it just looks like the ideal way to spend retirement. And at this point, my parents are almost feeling that way because we're doing most of the work.
Hired
hand. That's right. I mean, the best way to do retirement with a bed and breakfast is to have somebody else run it.
Do you provide computer technical service while you're up there?
It's funny, I do. I actually end up doing, I've got a corner nook where I have all my resources, and I do remote work with folks like yourselves to get a hold of me while I'm in Alaska. I do tech work for people there in Anchorage. I do tech work for the bed and breakfast, and I have guests that come through, and undoubtedly there's somebody every season, there's a half a dozen people that come through that have a tablet isn't working, they're trying to get pictures out of their camera, and so I end up helping a lot of people do that kind of, I'm like, look, I'm your bed and breakfast host, but my superhero costume is that of an IT guy, and so I do that in real life.
What about the Oculus?
Well, I actually have an associate that runs around and pretends to be me while I'm gone. And so that works out real well. And Sony's here the whole summer, and you guys know her. If you have problems with your devices, you can bring them into the office, and she'll help you with them.
I thought of a question. Firefox, anyone seen problems in the last week?
Using Firefox. Haven't really been paying attention to it.
Got very slow in the last week versus the other browsers.
Oh, that's interesting. Are you running antivirus other than Windows?
Just Windows.
No. Let's see, I've been using Firefox for some website development I'm doing. And what's nice about it is it's got a really accurate element inspector on it. So you can look at formatting and things. You can look at the markup of the formatting and the CSS. That's the only way I've been using it recently. I haven't paid any attention to how it's bringing up other web pages.
They did the new one. I went back to it because I liked it before. It's a lot faster, and you know.
But you think it's since all that speed increase
but
now?
Something
it's
happened, you know, like within the last week.
Huh. Well, I'll try pulling up some sites. Do you think it's still faster than Chrome?
Not this week.
So I should notice a significant slowdown.
It's so slow I quit using it.
Oh, okay. I'll take a look at it.
The response time is more like minutes.
That's not good.
Well,
minutes are...
If you have any sort of photos or something like that, you know, something where it's trying to bring up a website like that.
Where the photo comes like this.
Yeah.
That can't be right? It's not really doing that, is it?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, it's one thing to render, it's another thing to download. That seems really odd.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think your rendering time wouldn't change.
And usually because Microsoft keep insisting on Edge, I just go over to Edge and, oh, okay, there's real quick.
Yeah.
So yeah, the network.
Edge is really impressive. Have you, is everybody on the new Windows 10 other than my Macintosh people in here? The 1803, have you played with the timeline stuff?
No, I haven't played with it.
No, I mean, if you click the... I mean, your icon down in the bar changed. And before it used to be a square. And now it's like a square within half squares with a line on the side. And if you click on it, it brings up all the windows you're working on, but then it has a timeline of things that you have used in the past. So you can scroll through.
What does it look like?
Wait, the icon right next to the Windows icon. There's a Windows icon, and then I'm not sure how you've got it set up. It's probably Cortana. It's probably the Cortana circle. It might have a search field. But then next to that used to be just a white square. And when you clicked on that, it would show every window that you have running. Now the icon is a multi-squared icon with a line and a lever next to it. And when you click on it, you get the same list of every window you have open. But it also has a timeline, and you can scroll through the timeline and you can see what windows you had open yesterday or the day before yesterday. So as I scroll through mine, ooh, I hope I don't have anything embarrassing in here. I've got the document that I was working on LibreOffice yesterday. I've got MSN News. I've got the graphic that I was designing for this website listed here as a selection, and I could just click on that and it would bring up my GIMP editor. And it would bring up that file that I was working on yesterday.
I don't know how I got it, but I have seen that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of the new...
I don't see anything different.
Okay, I can see different from here next to the circle. Turn it around.
Next to the circle.
Okay, and you just opened it up, but you haven't done anything that's registered in the timeline.
Oh, okay.
And that's the only thing with timeline right now. I'm actually surprised to go back through here and see that the GIMP editor is using it, because that's an open source imaging editor. I wouldn't be surprised if Photoshop was using it, because that would be a great relationship with Microsoft. But I'm really surprised GIMP is listed here. All the web pages that I'm looking at are only Microsoft Edge, whereas I use Chrome and I use Firefox from time to time. None of that history is appearing in this timeline. Only Microsoft Edge history. So if you're not using the Edge browser, those pages are not getting registered on the timeline right now. And you can bet there's an API out there that Microsoft has provided for developers that are interested. And I wouldn't be surprised down the line, Chrome will have its own plugin. You won't even be aware of it. It'll just all of a sudden start making a history and timeline. Here's another one that surprises me. The VLC editor, or the VLC media player, is making references in timeline. So something you were listening to or watching will come up in this timeline as well.
I like VLC.
VLC is a real, real good multimedia player, especially if you've got an underperforming computer. It will allow you to watch movies, watch DVDs, listen to music. Even if your computer is one that's painful, it's one of those click and wait, click and wait. VLC, you might click and wait, but it'll play a video real well. It'll play it synchronized, and it'll allow you to take advantage of old equipment.
Is that timeline equivalent to the history of the Mac?
Well, that would be a bit confusing for a Mac user because they've got Time Machine. And it functions very similar to Time. You would think they stole the paradigm from Time Machine, but this has nothing to do with backups. It has everything to do with activities.
Yeah, well, that's what this is. And maybe it's a Chrome function. I don't know. But I can go to history, and I can go back of every...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, history. We've had history for a long time now in all these browsers. So it's doing the same style job. But it's doing it from an overall perspective. It's not Chrome's history. It's your Windows usage history. So you've got things like the file you listen to, like the podcast you listen to, right alongside the last web page you were on, right alongside the picture you were editing.
The nice thing about it is you don't have to go hunt for a file that you had yesterday.
That's exactly what's beautiful about it.
In a folder and
It's the concept of recently opened documents, recently browsed websites, recently worked on photos, all of that just combined into one tool. And it's got a lot of potential. We just need developers. We need, like, Google to go, okay, we accept this.
That's
good.
On the taskbar.
It's on the taskbar next to the Cortana circle.
Oh, okay.
What's Google app pop up on its homepage?
It's got
number
68
windows. Sure. I mean, this is an umbrella function that's come with the latest version of Windows 10. And one of the reasons that they're pushing it is that if you're using Edge on your computer and you're using Edge on your mobile device, this timeline goes with you. Now, all the other programs don't. I mean, like, you wouldn't see the VLC history, or maybe in the future you would. But when you bring up the Edge browser on your Android device, it will bring up that list of web pages that you were at yesterday. And that's kind of what they're trying to do. They're trying to bring that history experience to all the different devices you're using. But, of course, it's only on Edge.
I did not want to use Google for, let's say, political reasons on the map. What would you suggest?
Opera?
For
a search engine.
Like Chrome and any aspect of Google. I just wanted to...
DuckDuckGo is probably the one that has the best reputation.
What is it?
DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo.
Yeah. Duck. Isn't that what it's called? Is it DuckDuckGo? Yeah. I've used it from time to time. There was a period of time where it was the default search for Firefox. Is it still the default search for Firefox? Like when Yahoo got into all these issues, they took it as an opportunity to get out of their relationship with Yahoo. Yahoo was actually giving them money, that organization money, to put Yahoo as the default search. And when Yahoo got into all its privacy issues, where they had, you know, defrauded themselves and they lost all our information and decided not to tell us for 4 years, Firefox, as an open source organization and as an activist organization, thought that was pretty bad to be part of, and so they made a relationship with DuckDuckGo, which is a search engine that is making its name for not storing your information, for making it anonymous as you're searching. And so it has been, I'm not a big user of it, but it has a reputation as not being as effective as Google, but being much more private than Google.
So really the alternative is like trying to say if I live in the U.S. that I don't live under the U.S. government. Effectively, because Google controls and has so many functions and so many. I mean, Google Earth is amazing.
Yeah.
Program.
DuckDuckGo also has a browser that I've recently installed and been playing with on Android. So they may have one on iOS. I didn't look to see if it. So it supports its own browser. So DuckDuckGo as an organization is trying to be a privacy advocate for search and to make it even more private and secure. They're supporting their own browser now.
I'm not concerned about the privacy.
Is it DUCK?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually their logo is a cartoon duck. Yeah, quack, quack, quack. Pato.
Yeah.
Hey, on this note, another browser thing that I found recently.
I put DuckDuckGo.
Duck. Quack, quack, quack.
D-U-C-K.
That's right. DuckDuckGo. That's right.
Oh, it's not dot dot?
No, it's duck, duck.
Oh, I've got
quack, 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 like a mallard.
You'll never find it.
DuckDuckGo, and their whole thing is privacy, is that your search results are anonymized so that they're not associated with a specific account. Like, you know, one of the big things right now that people are concerned about, privacy people are concerned about, and a lot of just normal folks that were paying attention to the Senate inquiries, is this idea of shadow profiles. Well, Google's been doing shadow profiles a lot longer than Facebook has. And a shadow profile is this ability to profile you without giving you to them. I'm very fond of saying that in this day and age, you're always on a list. If you don't go to a website because you don't want to get on that list, well, you're on the list of people that didn't go to that website. And that's what shadow profiles really are all about. It's about being able to specify you out of general information, because it's so easy to do now. And some of this stuff happens. There's the pixel compromise, where they take one pixel on a web page and they set it up so that pixel follows you around for a few pages, and very quickly they can determine who you are and what you're doing from that one pixel. There's this ability to look at your font, your fonts that are installed, and your typing speed, things of that nature, and they're able to go, oh, well, that's that profile. That's, even though there's no name or social security or Facebook account associated with it, that's that dude. That's that dude that types four words an hour and always goes back to Yahoo to do his searches. So he's now doing this. Let's put all that information in that profile.
He uses the word bomb a lot.
Right, yeah. He uses bomb in every one of his Yahoo searches. Yes, Jeff. Chester.
I now have two computers. Is there a way to sync the computers so that when you turn one on, it picks up what's on the other one?
Well, this is one of those ways. Now, you have to, any of these syncing that you're doing, you got to use a cloud service. You got to use some mechanism to bring that information over to the other computer.
Basically, I have to use 365, Office 365.
Well, you don't have to use Office 365, but the timeline, if you go into the timeline, at the bottom of the timeline, there's a button there for you to associate your Microsoft Services account, basically your Hotmail account, with the timeline. So then your timeline information goes onto your cloud services with Microsoft, and then on your other device, you sign into the timeline with your Microsoft Services account, your Hotmail account. And then it brings all that information over to your other device. Now, some of this is already happening. I think I might have described for you one of my discoveries by accident, was that I had signed into my Microsoft Services account on my home theater PC. As you can imagine, I've got a large screen TV plugged into a computer. And that's in my living room, and my kids use it, my wife uses it, I use it. And my wife was using it as a PC and decided to go to Facebook on Microsoft Edge, and lo and behold, I'm signed in. And you can see my timeline, and you can act as though you're me. Well, I know I never signed in to my Facebook on that computer. That never happened. Because that is a public computer in my world, right? Because my kids use it, my wife uses it, my kids' friends use it. It is the general computer. My sister-in-law comes over and uses it. It's a 60-inch display with a computer connected to it, and I intentionally do not sign into services on that computer. But there it was. My Facebook's logged in, password's good, my whole history is there in Microsoft Edge. Every place that I've visited is right there. I'm like, this is crazy. And I start narrowing it down, and I had signed into the Microsoft Services account through the Microsoft Store. That's the only place I had signed into it, so I could download some apps onto that computer. But at the time, I don't know if it's changed now, but at the time I signed into it, I had granted it general access to all my Microsoft services, which included my history, which included synchronizing passwords, And so when you open it, it was as weird as you could leave a page on my laptop and go to Edge on the home computer and it would bring up the last page I was on my laptop. It works excellently. It actually works by accident, and it was very difficult to figure out how to get it to stop working. If you go into your settings, in the Windows settings, there is an area of account settings, and you can stop the synchronization, and you can remove your Microsoft account. And what I discovered later, I don't know if this was true with the original Windows 10 releases, but at least I know it's true now. There's a whole slew of Microsoft stuff you don't have to sign into to get it to download. Updates to the store and updates to applications that come with Windows 10. You don't have to. You can go as just an anonymous account and still get those updates. You don't have to sign into it. So this can really trip you up. You can set up a computer to be a general computer for anyone to use. That's what this was, like a kiosk computer for my family. But I signed into the Microsoft Store to download apps, and it signed all this stuff in. So even though it's not my account on Windows, even though it was intended to be all locked down, all this cloud stuff came synchronizing over to it.
You're going to have some 13-year-old girl going nuts on Amazon on your computer.
No, you're absolutely right. That's not a joke. Yeah. That's exactly what could happen, is that on my kiosk computer, somebody could be shooting off Amazon purchases. So I nipped that in the butt real quick. But yeah, so you've got those kinds of options. And the timeline definitely is a safer thing to play around with, I think, than... I don't like the idea of passwords so... I like to know that things like that are happening. I don't like to discover they've been happening. I like to know they're happening. And I still have not adopted LastPass, but every time I go out looking for password managers, I just hear the best things about LastPass. Dave, are you using LastPass? Is anybody here using LastPass?
No, I'm using it, but it's so confusing to me.
Paul has a terrible time with it. My sister and I really like it.
Yeah? So what do you like about it?
What I like about it is I don't have to keep coming up with these passwords. And all my things have different passwords.
And have you taken advantage of not worrying about making passwords?
Yeah.
Like letting LastPass make the passwords?
Yeah.
So that's an amazing feature there, is that you can just give up all control over your passwords and give it over to LastPass. And all you got to do is keep track of one password.
KeePass, I guess, is an interesting variation of it.
Okay.
I think you have...
I'm not sure I'm familiar with KeePass.
I don't remember the details, but it's the one that does most of the automation, but you have control and you have to do some of the more of the initial setup, because I think was the main difference.
Well, honestly, I mean, it may be interesting. It might be a nice exploration. But for me to feel comfortable telling people to explore one, I can't tell you the number of tech journalists that I respect that respect this LastPass system.
Mm-hmm. LastPass is typically...
It is the highly touted way to do these things. And mm-hmm. and the features that I've heard... Maybe this summer I'm just going to have to get into it, because the features that I'm liking are the one where we just give up on dealing with our own passwords. We let an algorithm determine what the passwords are. We give up on the idea that you're going to go over to a friend's computer and sign into it. We've got mobile devices everywhere now. If you need to sign in, you can do it from your phone. All you have to do is download the LastPass program and sign into it, and all your passwords come with it. But those passwords, not only are they encrypted, they're stored in an encrypted channel to you. I like the in case of death feature. I like the idea that you can assign an email address to receive access to your LastPass account in case of death. And so this is one where somebody goes to LastPass and says, my husband died, I need access to his passwords. Being in this scenario, the husband that died, before you died, have associated your wife's email address with this in case I die feature. So they're getting, so they send an announcement. No, you have associated your email address so that they send you an email address saying, have you died?
Yeah.
If you don't respond within a certain period of time, then they give that other email address access to the passwords.
You just don't answer.
You give them your wife's email address and you say, if I don't answer, have you died in 30 days, send her access to my password list.
30 days?
Well, no, you
can
get
you change the time.
That's the point. You get to say, you could set it within hours. I mean, yeah. But I think that feature alone makes this a really intriguing system.
On this system, do they say your bank, Wells Fargo? Is it one password, or do they change it each time they go into it?
Well, it stays. You can change it. You can generate it.
You can set this up too.
Let me tell you the other feature that I like, because I think it addresses your issue. They have a feature where you can blanket change all your passwords.
Oh, I like that. So right? You don't really have to give them passwords on everything.
Right.
Are you giving them to them once?
You give them to them once, but they can set the password to something nonsensical that you had nothing to do with.
That's what I prefer.
And I haven't used this. I don't know if you guys have used this.
Well, my sister researches it a lot, and when we get in trouble, she fixes it for us.
Okay.
Like if I try to use the password to get into it, and I can't get into it, then she gets into it. But is that handy? No.
No, that's...
The handy thing for me is that I can always open my vault without using a password, because I'm the only one using my computer. I know that somebody
could
steal it and do that. But what I don't like is that if I say Kaiser, as a website, and it has a little thingy there, it looks like LastPass. If I click on that, it won't open it. I have to go to LastPass, go into my vault, and go down the list till I get to the Kaiser, and click that, and then it will open.
So you always have
invoke
to
invoke it from
that.
There.
You know? You invoke it from there.
Yeah.
So you're using the LastPass. You don't have to do that?
No.
Okay.
I don't have as much trouble getting in as Paul does, and my sister doesn't have any trouble at all.
And also, if I set up a new account or something like that, it doesn't say, "Do you want to save this password?" I don't know how to associate it with a new account.
Yeah. All right, Paul, for you, I'm going to get into LastPass this summer, and when you say these things, I'm going to have answers for you.
Right on their website, their introductory thing is they do it a totally different way for that, so you avoid that problem.
See,
okay.
That's what I've never seen any instructions for.
Looked at either one, but that one kind of intrigued me when I was looking at some of the functionality.
One of the big things for me with LastPass is that Steve Gibson recommends it, and he is a security expert from way back, who's really well renowned.
What do they charge?
And he gets the most money from it.
Well,
but
what he did is the developer of LastPass, he asked to see the code, and he went through it with the developer and looked at the technology and saw how sound it was.
KeePass is also free and open source.
Yeah.
Good or bad?
Well, I mean, I bet there's people out there doing compare and contrast between the two systems.
If I was going to do it, get started again on it, I would definitely do that.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard so much good stuff about LastPass that I don't feel uncomfortable recommending it, even though I'm not using it. Many of the people that I respect and listen to have endorsed this, and they've vetted it.
What do they charge? Does anybody know?
That's a good question. Let's you guys don't know what it costs?
I don't know that it charges anything.
My sister takes care of that for me.
But so many times I try to use it, and the thing says, "Did you forget your password?" I say, "Yes." And so then it changes the password, but not in FastPass.
$24 a year or $2 a month.
Then Peggy comes to me and says,
$24 a year.
What is it?
He goes, I don't know.
But the people that use this stuff, they use lots of devices. And that's the other thing. The endorsement is because they use lots of different devices. They use phones. They use tablets. They use desktop computers and laptop computers. And it's one of the very first apps they install on anything that they use. It's like the very first thing is they install LastPass, so then everything else flies after that.
Oh, I don't.
And you can stick all kinds of stuff in LastPass. Like you could stick pictures of your passport in LastPass, so you wouldn't have to worry about losing that or having that archived. You could lose everything, and you could get a hold of a mobile phone, install the LastPass app, sign into it, and now you have copies of your passport available to you. I mean, it's just an example, but that's the way this system is used.
So you said there was instructions. I've never seen the instructions. I should read the instructions.
Yeah. Well, I will. I will get myself into it. I really like the in case of death function. I really like the just give up every password and let them deal with it. And recently I've heard them talking about this reset all your passwords at once. Like say you have a computer that you have had stolen that you did not have a password on, and all of a sudden every password that you use is in the open, because that's the worst thing that could happen to a LastPass person is your LastPass password is already authorized and they're already in your computer, so absolutely everything you access is authorized. But you can go to LastPass now and apparently change all your passwords at once.
But if they have your device and access to LastPass, and I change it here, it's in the cloud, so it changes it in the device.
To begin with, you could immediately change your LastPass password.
Yeah, okay.
And another question with regard to LastPass, for those that have it, you know, often you have to put in your identification, like your email or some other word, other in addition to your password.
Yes.
Does it do that also?
Honestly, Chester, I can't go too deep into it. I know the propaganda, but I haven't had the user experience. I think Paul actually has more genuine user experience, because you're complaining about the kinds of things any normal person would be complaining about. And so there, just Paul's experience alone tells us there is a learning curve to it.
Oh, with it.
This is not going to be just seamless and straightforward and intuitive. Paul's experience alone makes it clear that there's a learning curve to using something like this. But I think those features are what bring you into it.
Yeah, most of the time it's your email address, but not always.
Yeah.
I'm really curious how they blanket change every password.
Yeah.
I mean, they must keep track, in their cloud services, they must keep track of the forgot my password or the change my password procedures on the websites that you frequent, just so that they can go through that with your new passwords.
Well, you have a vault where all your stuff that you use your passwords is.
Right. So it's not inconceivable, because you can stick things like pictures and documents and all kinds of, it's not inconceivable to think they could put the instructions, the algorithmic instructions for changing your password right alongside it. It's not inconceivable. I mean, it's hard to imagine there isn't a human in the works there somewhere, though, because the way you change your password at Bank of America is going to be different from the way you change your password at Google. And though I mentioned those two, undoubtedly they know how to change those two, because a large percentage of people are going to want to know how to change those two. But, I mean, I've got Alaska USA Credit Union. Have they taken the time to figure out how to do that one? Have they figured out how to change it on the Computer Club blog?
Maybe it's the same
thing, right?
Maybe it's the same password, but it's encrypted differently. You know.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well,
they changed it because now the password is 87 characters long instead of 53 characters long.
But the result you're saying is the same.
As far as the company is concerned, it's the same password.
Maybe. I'm just trying. Steve would be the one to look at whether that was actually... I mean, because what you'd have to do is you'd have to give up to passwords that are nonsensical, random, 128 character, right? And then you're still... No, you couldn't do that securely because a password list could get out even still, you would think. And you still need to protect yourself from that password list getting out.
Well, I used to use WordPerfect. I had a file that had a password, and it had all my passwords listed. But now I can't do that.
Right.
How about LastPass getting hacked?
Yeah.
Well, it's a concern. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is a concern. The
hopefully they'll tell us right away.
Yeah, I mean, your vault is kept on your computer, but it's synced in the cloud. It's synced encrypted. I mean, it requires your LastPass password. I mean, all I can say that I'm certain of is that they've taken to this point, everything that's considered the standard security precautions that you can take. Because that's their business. Their business is protecting you against those things. So their website supports the latest encryption certificates. Their software supports the latest security certificates for developers. They're using the latest encryption on their website and in your vault. They're taking all those and the moment that something's discovered that's been compromised, they're making, because that's their business. That's what they're trying to sell you. And
for
so,
a hacker's business, it's also number one site for some government or something. They want to try it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an arms race. It's
right now they seem to be winning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Question.
Okay. Scott, have a cool summer.
You're out of here, Russ. All right.
There goes my
ride. Oh, no.
You make enough to live
well,
through the summer?
Russ, thanks for your continued interest in our computer club.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Sometimes it gets interesting.
Yeah, when you talk about Macs.
Yeah.
I started with a Mac thing, and I can't remember what it was now. I was going to get back to it and never did. Yeah.
If you buy it, I got an old computer starting to slow down and act funny and getting black squares bouncing across the screen, so I assume the hard drive is getting ready to...
Black squares bouncing across the screen? What is that?
Drive. I don't know. Just you see the black squares every once in a while go across the screen.
Maybe it's a cable. No.
It's not just sitting there.
It's a laptop?
Yeah.
Oh. What
video
software?
Card.
Windows 10. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's actually a good guess. Is a video card? Is it hot?
I don't know.
One thing might be.
Is it an HP?
Yeah.
Well, then that's the problem.
Well, I think.
Well, my question is: before you
can say that about anything.
No, I can't, but I can say it with confidence about HP.
So my question is: without downgrading all my equipment that I can't afford anyway. If I buy a new computer, can I load all my programs into the cloud and sync them to the new computer, or no?
Not that easily. No.
Well, there is...
There's always operating system pieces, it seems like, the software puts in.
Your biggest issue is applications, because your data can be... I mean, you can...
My documents, my pictures, that's no problem.
Well, you could use... You're using Windows 10, right? So you could use file history, which would be a complete backup of all the data in your computer. You could do a backup. You could do a traditional backup of everything and just put it on a hard drive. And both those things could be drug over or copied over to cloud storage.
You
like
could do like a ease US filing type stuff that will move it between PCs.
Say that again?
A product like ease US has stuff that will... clone it and put it on another thing, kind of like the old Ghost.
But that would bring the operating system with it too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. What I'd do first, get this, get a vacuum cleaner and clean it out.
Yeah, because if it's hot, it would cause
it's
that problem.
It's probably got so much crud and dust that it's in our house, it shouldn't be dog
hair. A can of compressed air.
Yeah.
Yeah. The The video card on HPs is a good one, though, because they used to melt themselves off the motherboard.
If it takes the cover off, if the cover comes off reasonably easy, and just blast it.
The debris and stuff that's in there, dust and cat hair and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, a good cleaning. But the reason I make fun of HP is because they had a run of laptops where the video chip would get so hot it would just desolder itself from the board.
I had one, and that's exactly what happened.
And there was a whole side business in my business of people that had resolder kits, called reflow kits. And you'd bring your motherboard to them, they'd take the entire computer apart, pull out the motherboard, run it through a reflow kit. It would try and solder. See, the problem with... I never liked it, because the problem is when you start... When a chip starts popping off of the motherboard, parts of it are still connected, and so you can damage a chip. So then after the reflow, you don't... If it's still not working, you don't know if you just damaged it trying to heat it back up and reconnect it, or if it was damaged. But what you really have is a whole bunch of labor invested in something that's not working. And if it does work, the other part I didn't like, even if that does work, it's bound to happen again because it's a design flaw. And so there isn't a good way to prevent it from happening again. It's not because it wasn't soldered correctly the first time. It's because they put a chip in a design that gets too hot in the first place. So you fix it, and months or years down the line, you're going to have the exact same problem again. To me, it's a computer for the trash.
Yeah.
Can you take a hard drive that's malfunctioning? Like I had a computer that had all my files on it, and one night we had a hurricane blow through and killed the computer dead. The hard drive still turns.
Okay. Can you get data off of it?
Can I get data off of it somehow?
I mean, maybe. Yeah. They get an adapter for it.
Yeah, a bus that makes it a portable hard drive.
You're looking for a SATA to USB adapter. And I bet you could buy one at the Stern store there in Wyman's. And in fact, I've got one I can show you.
Depending on how old is it, because
the small laptop one.
Is it a laptop hard drive?
Yeah.
If it's more than like 10 years old,
my ThinkPads have the adapters because I have extra a bay that I can put a hard drive in. So you can easily just stick it in that hard drive.
That's what the hard drive looks like in a laptop?
No, this is an adapter. This is a USB to SATA adapter for a hard drive.
Yeah.
And that would fit over a desktop, but then I have a separate power supply that you have to plug into it so you can power a desktop hard drive. But from a laptop hard drive, all you just run off the USB power.
I'd work better in my ThinkPad with the extra bay that you can put a hard drive in.
This?
No.
What do you
His hard drive.
Oh, just mount the
hard drive. I have removable hard drives on my PC.
Yeah, you probably get into SATA versus USB 3. Like you could probably, especially USB C, if you're using one of the Thunderbolts or
just come, stick your hard drive in it and see if it's readable.
Hey, let me share a Mac thing with you guys. I just remembered what it was. I've got at least one customer right now that's suffering from a keyboard problem with these insanely expensive Macintoshes. And I just thought it made for an interesting story. Apparently, if you haven't been paying attention to the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros are this sleek, beautiful design. Gary's brought his MacBook here. This is the previous generation. The new generation is half the width. Half the height on it, but the same width, but half the height on it, and easily a third the weight. I mean, they feel like you're carrying tablets around with you. You open them up, and the keyboard feels really nice, even though it's very shallow. And there's been some complaints about the clackety clack, but what they've done is they've redesigned the way the keyboard works completely. And it turns out, there's not a lot of tolerance in these keyboards. And people are having problems with particles of dust. They're having problems with crumbs from food. And it will get lodged underneath the key, and the key ceases to exist. It does not work. And so I have a customer that's writing emails and has no spaces in between words. Because the space bar.
Well, if you move to Thailand, that's okay, because that's the way they do it over there.
And Apple really doesn't have an official position on this yet. But there is a lawsuit building out there. And it gets bigger every day.
Class action.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to watch to see what Apple does about it. The 2016 laptops, the first ones that came out of their new redesign, are the ones where complete failure ends up happening to a key. So the space key never comes back.
Even compressed air doesn't fix
it. Even with compressed air is the number one fix. In fact, anybody that owns one of these laptops now, I'm like, get a can of compressed air, carry it around with you. And if you're doing critical work, this is the silliest thing at all. If you're doing critical work and you're not going to be within reach of an Apple store, get a Bluetooth keyboard so that you don't have to lose any work because there's a crumb under your space bar. The space bar is the one that most people are having trouble with, but this can happen to any of the keys because of the new design. Now, I haven't seen any complaints of not being able to fix it with the 2017 redesigned. That's not to say they won't show up, but right now, anyone that has complete failure of a specific key owns a 2016 version of this. Now, here's the rub. If it's under warranty still, and that's like Apple Care, the 3-year Apple Care, or the 1-year warranty from when you bought it, which is up for the 2016 models, they replace the whole front cover, they call it a front cover, for free. If it's out of warranty, that's a $700 repair. That $700 repair is enough for me to look at a different manufacturer for a computer.
Buy two computers.
They need to resolve this issue before I will recommend a MacBook upgrade. It needs to be fixed. You were never intended to carry a separate keyboard and a can of air with your laptop wherever you go. And you were intended to use these laptops at Starbucks while eating scones. That was why they built them.
That's how it'll be handled. The lawyers will put in, if you eat around 10 feet within this computer, the warranty's void.
Yeah, exactly.
But I could imagine somebody dusting the thing and blow a crumb under a...
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. You're trying to fix the space bar, and now you broke the inner key.
Yeah.
Well, I had a Dell, and a little crumb fell on it, so I went... Oh. And one of the keys popped off. It was not covered under my warranty. I'm like, excuse me, I will never buy another Dell. I will tell everybody in the world.
See ya, you too. Have a good summer.
You can puff one of those off, blowing a crumb.
Wait, that's...
Did you huff and puff or just puff?
No, I just went... I just wanted that little crumb to...
That's a funny story, but I got to say, it had to have been broken to begin with. because of the way those keys are manufactured. Those keys have these little hinges on it, just micro hinges with pieces of plastic. And if they're meant to quick release and quick put back on. What happens is that somebody inadvertently quick releases it, like they get a piece of fabric caught underneath it or a fingernail and it pops off the keyboard. And then when they're putting it back in, they break one of the little clips, and that key is never the same again. It will always... That's right. It'll always sit in an angle. It's always ready to be the first key to pop off again. It's definitely the next key to break again, so it'll lose another one of those little clips. Now you don't even have a key there. You're putting it back on the space. Well, after the second clip breaks, then you're just like, you know, charity putting it back on there just for your own shits and giggles. Because you know by the time you're done with the letter, it's going to pop off again because it's so broken. And they don't sell those keys. You can't buy those broken keys. So what that is an entire keyboard replacement.
Yeah, and it was not covered under my warranty.
That's really weird, because normally something like that would be covered by the warranty. if you've got, well, let me see, Dell had a number of different tiers of warranties, so it would be easy to buy a warranty that it wasn't covered under. But there's this accidental protection warranty that they have that would have covered that, would have covered coffee, would have covered dropping it on the floor.
Yeah, it wasn't under the two-year warranty that came with the computer.
Right, right. It probably wasn't. Because
whatever, it's like...
Yeah. Cause, you know why? Because it's a common problem.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like Apple and many manufacturers now put water-sensitive tape inside their devices, so that if they open them up and they see there's water damage, well, then that's not covered by their warranty. And what were you doing with it out in the water? It's not waterproof.
Being in the rain.
Yeah. Now, the flip side of that is the flagship phones now are almost completely waterproof. Apple is
wow.
now saying that their iPhones you can go swimming with. I was watching a manufacturer quality control tour through the OnePlus One manufacturing facility for the OnePlus One, no, the OnePlus 6, I think is what they call it. The latest flag phone from OnePlus. And one of their stations had the phone sitting in a shower. And what their propaganda is that it should be able to be showered for 24 hours and then come back to life after only a couple of days of drying. Which kind of, in my mind, sets a new precedent for how we deal with new devices. Like,
yeah.
If it does get wet, assume that it's going to come back to life after a couple of days of drying.
I wonder if a person should take a normal phone, take the back off, and put silicone grease around the seal, like that, and then when you close it, at least maybe if it falls in the toilet, you can grab it and take it out again and not have water in it.
I think there's no question that you've advantaged yourself, you know, if you're willing to put up with, I mean, you're talking basically scuba, you know.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you could be delicate enough and not make a mess.
Yeah, you know, as your IT guy, I would never recommend having you do that yourself, because the chances of you causing yourself more problems are a lot higher than advantages. But your suggestion reminds me of the iPod Shuffles. You remember the little square, just a button, no screen? Very convenient, not waterproof. Never waterproof. And so I want to take it out kiteboarding. It won't survive. In fact, I've gotten them wet before and they completely die. But you can go online and there are people that have made businesses out of waterproofing those devices. And they... A shuffle, $50. A waterproof shuffle, $200. Right, but they do it right. They're not disadvantaging the person that's using it. You haven't done more damage than good. They've gone through that whole process.
Put it in a baggie.
These keyboards.
Tupperware.
Another disadvantage with these keyboards, this chiclet design. They're not easily replaced. The old keyboards, like the one that you had the key broken, well, at least you can disassemble it. Many times the removal of that keyboard and replacement of that keyboard is pretty straightforward. Many times you don't even have to open up the front cover. You can just get to it right here. A couple of screws on the bottom and some tabs on the top, and you can pull off that keyboard, disconnect the wire, connect another one, put it back on. That's not a big deal. Just being, you got to be careful with the wire because it's fragile. These keyboards, you have to pull off the top cover, and the reason Apple replaces the entire top cover is because there is 80 screws holding these keys in. There's like four or three, or well, what's the math? There's 26 keys plus there's at least two screws for every key that's on a chiclet keyboard. So somebody, if you were going to, and they do it, there are techs that do that on eBay, you can buy the keyboard without the front cover, and they will sit there and unscrew every screw and pull off the keyboard and then roll down the other keyboard and screw every screw back in. And actually, Gary's suffering from needing that kind of fix because his power button stopped working. And the power button on that particular model MacBook is a part of the keyboard. It's not a separate component that you can just replace the power button. If you need to replace the power button on that particular Mac, you have to replace the entire keyboard.
No, you don't.
Or you can just not do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the battery out.
Yeah.
Well, that's that model as well. The battery is screwed in place. So what have you done, Gary? Are you holding it in place with two screws or no screws? This is Gary's fix.
There's no reason to have any screws.
Fortunately, it was never a waterproof laptop to begin with.
No back on it. Oh, there it is.
So his fix is that if he forgets, he can restart it without any problem. But if he forgets and leaves it without being plugged in and drains the battery dead, then he can't turn the computer back on. And so he has to pull off the back, disconnect the power wire, which is essentially a power off, plug it back in, and then that act turns the computer back on. Because the default for a Macintosh without a battery is to turn itself on. And so as soon as you add power to it, it turns itself back
on.
It works great, yeah. There's nothing wrong with his laptop except for that damn power button.
And I hate screws. 83 of them that are around here, however many there are.
I suspect by our next meeting, Gary's going to have like clothespins or something. He'll have some mod.
Gorilla tape.
Yeah, that makes it easier for what he's doing.
Oh, there's those huge binder clips.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
The Hello Kitty ones.
Yeah. Oh, that would look cute with Hello Kitty binder clips.
Right. Well, guys, we've reached the end. We're about 10 minutes over. I'm happy to entertain any more questions before we call it, but I'm ready to call it. That's it.
That's it. Have a nice summer, everybody.
It's unfortunate when I'm the most interesting thing to listen to. Thank you. I hope you all have a nice summer.
You too.
You too.
Yeah,
you too. Enjoy.
And remember, I am available if you got my contact. If you don't have my contact information, you can check internationalcs.net. I've got one representative here of me doing remote work for him while I'm out of him.
It
works great, so I'm happy to remote into whatever problem you're having and try and help you with it.
Takes me a while.
If this has been the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson. If you're interested in any of this, if you've been listening all season to us. If you're a hate listener, if you listen and make fun of me, and now you're disappointed you don't get to listen to new content, there's a lot to hate on, because there's a lot of content out there. You can go to sccclub.org, and you will find a list of these meetings. If you are into podcasts, you can go to iTunes, Google Play, or any of your favorite places to find a podcast, and just search for the San Carlos Computer Club. And it'll bring up our RSS feed, and you can find a collection of all these recordings. So if you need something to make fun of over the summer, there's plenty out there to do. If you're enjoying this and you feel like you've missed something, please go back there, sccclub.org. You'll find all kinds of interesting topics. And if you do find yourself listening to something that isn't mentioned in the notes, please make a comment. You don't need to sign up for an account. Anybody can make a comment on the blog. And I'll add it to the search taxonomy. Taxology? I think that's the right word. So that other people will be able to find what you found was interesting. If you're having computer problems out there anywhere on the Internet, I'm available through internationalcs.net. You can email me at scott@internationalcs.net. I'm going to say my goodbyes. And until next October, tech on.
Nos vemos.
Nos vemos.
Meanwhile,
thank you, Scott.
You are very welcome.
How to fix toilets.
That's right. All the bed and breakfast goodness you could hope to digest. Wonder if I should try doing a bed and breakfast podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Maggie. Have a good summer. Ray, have a good summer.
You too. Enjoy. Don't work too hard.
Scott, we're going to be heading towards you, but we won't be going that far. It's the last port, maybe.
I would love to say there's always a place for you to stay, but if you've been in Anchorage in the summer, you know that's just not true. It's just so full of people, I got to know beforehand. You might be in a tent in the yard.
We're going on a cruise ship.
Well, excellent. Where are you ending up? Seward?
No, we're only going part way and coming back.
Oh, okay.
To San Francisco. San Francisco to San Francisco. Hey. We're missing Skagway this year and going to some other place. I don't know where. Because all I know is that I'm going away and somebody else is cooking and cleaning. And
that's what matters.
And there's chocolate.
And all I know is that it's a ukulele cruise. I'm going to be playing the ukulele.
All right.
You want to see your poster girl?
Poster girl. Oh, let me turn this off.
You know, they say, 95% of fame is just showing up.